This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor. Henry Alfred Kissinger, born Heinz Alfred Kissinger, May 27th, 1923, passed away November 29th, 2023, political scientist, geopolitical consultant, politician, served as Secretary of State, National Security Advisor in the administrations of Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford, 1969 to 1977, a long time ago. What do we make of him now that he's at 100, moved on to the ages? I welcome Professor H.J. Mackinder. This is Mackinder's opinion of Henry Kissinger, who, after all, was a student of H.J. Mackinder once upon a time. The salient detail of Mr. Kissinger is that he was born in Germany. This is a German citizen born whose parents and others were obliged to move because of the collapse of German civility, generally understood as the crisis of Hitlerite. However, in the United States, he became an intellectual of great note and then a foreign policy expert. What is striking is this is the academy goes to Washington. Professor, a very good evening to you. Your measure of the passing of Henry Kissinger, striking that one of your profession would become a policymaker in a city, Washington, where there is no veneration for your profession. Good evening to you.
Good evening. Kissinger is a possible topic for endless commentary, and he certainly produced vast amounts of verbiage himself, so we have more than enough information. But there are still questions that I'm not sure we'll ever fully understand. And really what we want to know is what was his style of diplomacy? How did it differ from other practitioners? And what was his legacy? And let's just jump in with the legacy, and then later we'll talk about the origins of his approach. What strikes me most in his legacy is something that's not there at all, which is that he never understood the importance of the Soviet Union, nor did he understand the precariousness of the position of the Soviet Union, which, after all, went under in 1991, and regretted by nobody. And very little of what applied to the Soviet Union is true for Russia today. We have a completely different set of problems. Kissinger fully believed the sorts of things that people of his generation did about the Soviet Union. So he expected that perhaps the Eastern European Soviet Empire would break down, but he was absolutely unprepared for the end of the Soviet Union, and he really had nothing ever to say about it. He's striking in that he gets a couple of things. He talks about how, well, they've got less territory than they had since Peter the Great. They're back to Peter's Great. But he doesn't really have facts. And this reveals the degree to which he is a generalist, not an empiricist. We'll get back to that. In any case, what are the things that he really made a mark of? I'll just talk about two. One is the end of the Vietnam War, and the other is the China policy. In 1967, Kissinger was visiting Vietnam, and his friend Henry Cabot Lodge, his old friend, told him he could do whatever he wanted. And so Kissinger went around, and he went down and looked at Mr. Tu and Mr. Key, and he decided they were no good. And he did a little bit of other research. And then he took the information that he learned about the negotiations that the Johnson administration was carrying out. And he passed that on to Nixon. And Nixon was thereby able to reposition his campaign to push by promising a faster peace in Vietnam. In other words, Kissinger treated the American war effort as the object of partisan politics. And when Nixon won, Kissinger's role in passing this information on from the other side is one of the things it said that got him the job of National Security Advisor. And in October of 1972, he concluded his negotiations with Lê Duc Tho, which had been carried out in there's a little town called Saint-Nom-le-Bretèche outside of Paris, which is a kind of gated community, and it was in the house there that they carried these things out. October 72, Kissinger says, peace is at hand. And 1973, January 27th, they signed the agreement. Later in 1973, he and Lê Duc Tho are awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. Kissinger keeps his, Lê Duc Tho doesn't accept his. Then in April of 1975, which is to say less than 3 years after Kissinger has said peace is at hand, South Vietnam is invaded by North Vietnam in violation of the treaty that they had won for which they had won the Nobel Peace Prize, and it goes under. And it was one of the great failures of American foreign policy. It's not clear to me that things would not have been better if Kissinger had not touched this, because I think that Johnson, ghastly as he was, and Humphrey, who was in his own way very, very bad, they had a kind of a plan in place that was realistic or semi-realistic about how to get out of Vietnam. And Nixon rushed it, and then Kissinger was part of the rush. And as we will see, rushing is not the way to get foreign policy done. Now, so in the case of Vietnam, it might have been better if Kissinger had not gotten involved at all. We had never had those Paris talks. Sooner or later, the situation might have ended up better than, in fact, it did. April 15th of 1975, just go look at the films of the people, these high-level American officials elbowing each other and fighting with each other on the roofs of buildings in Saigon to get onto evacuation helicopters. One of the most disturbing and darkest moments in our history. Now, let's talk about China, because that's usually considered to be his great achievement. First point, it's essential to have some kind of communications with China. It's a mistake to think that before Nixon went, there was complete isolation. There was a British embassy or a ministry in Beijing. From the minute the communists came in, the Swiss were there, lots of countries were there, the Pakistanis were there. It was not somehow a hidden capital in a kind of a mysterious walled kingdom. But the United States had indirect sources. And in the Eisenhower administration, and even in the Kennedy administration, there was great emphasis on trying to learn more about China. And a great deal of very, very good work was done by people in the State Department. I would mention in particular the Deputy Assistant Secretary for East Asia under Kennedy, Edward Rice. Very, very fine, fine diplomat. He had previously been Consul General Consul General in Hong Kong. He wrote a fine book called Mao's Way, which is to this day as accurate as any popular book on the subject. And so the whole pretense that Kissinger was somehow, that Nixon was somehow opening up an isolated place, this is false. This is self-dramatization. We see this when Kissinger goes in 1971, in July of 1971, he goes to China. As an elaborate charade that they go through, and he goes to Paris, and then he goes to Pakistan, and then he claims to be sick, and then they fly to China. And there are a lot of childish stuff associated with this. The plane was flying into Chinese airspace, and there was one future ambassador aboard the plane. Kissinger basically had four briefcase carriers with him, and one of them stood up and went to the front of the plane. So that after the pilot, I guess it was Pakistan Airlines plane, that he would be the first person to enter into Chinese airspace. And this is very childish. And the name of this expedition was Polo One. And I watched it and said, why is it called Polo One? Because all I could think of is, Polo Breath Mints. And then one day I had a horrible, crushing, understanding that it was Polo as in Marco Polo. And I thought, this is just crazy. This is Disneyfication. This is fantasy land. In any case, there's something more important to say, which is that we see in this operation that Kissinger was unaware. He was congenitally unaware of intelligence threats. And when he made his secret trip in 1971, he imagined that no one would know about it. But in fact, before Kissinger went, the PRC had established a secret telephone link to Taipei, which Kissinger was unaware of. Nobody knew anything about it. It was just a circuit that went through Hong Kong. It was not some kind of high tech. But they had a secret phone number. They had a secret phone line. And this was discovered by two Americans, one of them a Foreign Service officer, a very fine ambassador, who learned it from people in Taiwan long after it, around 1980 or so, they stopped using this, or 1990, they stopped using this phone number. They stopped using this phone link. And the other, an American who confirmed this in China with the people who would know about it. So we have two very good sources for the existence of this, phone line. Kissinger, it never occurred to him that the people he was dealing with might know more about him than he did about them. In other words, have what we call intelligence dominance. But during the whole period of the American-China policy being formed and Taiwan being cut loose, Taiwan had total intelligence dominance over the United States. And we see this in a very revealing moment when Kissinger was getting ready. I think it was July 1st, 1971. He was wandering around, and he ran in to the ambassador from Taiwan. His name was Shen Jianhong, a very very well-qualified diplomat from Taiwan. Kissinger was embarrassed, and he was dismissive, and he writes in it, "It's too bad to see this nice, credulous Chinese guy who was Taiwan's had always been good. They'd always been friendly. They'd always been cooperative. We promised them things that we couldn't do." But as Kissinger said, elemental forces were about to sweep everything away. Kissinger began telling all kinds of lies to Ambassador Shen about what was going on. Now, Kissinger assumed that there's no way it didn't occur to him that Shen might have known exactly what Kissinger was doing. Given that the Taipei and Peking had already been talking, I think the chances are that Chiang Kai-shek's man in Washington, as it was those days, he would have known exactly what Kissinger was doing. So Kissinger, in his memoir, he sheds a lot of crocodile tears, but he doesn't realize what I see. It is, I think Shen was remarkable because he was able to keep a complete straight face and look like just a sweet, credulous, ignorant guy, while Kissinger just told him one crazy thing after another. That is really a more steely diplomat than Kissinger was. But this particular instance reveals a lot. And we see in it a trait that people remarked about Kissinger, which was that he didn't really believe in values in foreign policy. Now, I don't think he was a war criminal or anything, but he thought that in realpolitik, there was no place for anything other than consideration of power. And I think you could say that his watchword was from the Melian Dialogue, the strong do what they will and the weak suffer what they must.
I'm speaking with Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, commenting on the passing of Henry Kissinger. We've come to the part where I want to ask a question about Vietnam, my youth. So when we come back, Professor H.J. Mackinder on the way Kissinger handled realism, realist foreign policy, and the end of the Vietnam War. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.